This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Bill Siemering, was one of the architects of National Public Radio. He was NPR's first director of programming. He wrote the network's first mission statement and created All Things Considered. I had the pleasure of working with him in the 80s when he was station manager at WHYY, where Fresh Air is produced. For the past few years, Siemering has been taking his vision of radio to emerging democracies, places like South Africa, Mozambique, and Mongolia, where radio used to be controlled by the state, or where the society was so low-tech few people had radios. Siemering started this work in 1993 when he received a MacArthur Foundation fellowship. Now he works with the Soros Foundation's Open Society Institute. His work ranges from training journalists to bringing transmitters to fledgling stations. Bill Siemering says radio is often the most important form of communication in new democracies.
In the first place, these are countries that are quite poor and couldn't afford to have television or newspapers. Many of the people are illiterate. Distribution of newspapers is difficult. And so radio is the most important medium.
Set the scene for us. I mean, describe a couple of very low-tech places where people rely on radio for information and for connection.
In Mozambique, I went out into a rural village where some of the youngsters had not seen a white person before, and we were there to gather information about what their interests were, what their needs were for radio. Some of them have not been to a store to make a purchase for maybe 5 years. They are subsistence farmers that are just bartering. And so some of them, many of them don't have radio to begin with and didn't really know about radio, or the language or the broadcasts they could hear were in Portuguese and not in their own language. So this was a very isolated kind of situation, but they were very much in need of health information, where you have high incidence of sexually transmitted diseases, for example, or poor nutrition, really preventable diseases that can be aided by just information. The other side of that would be in Mongolia, where you have the largest group of nomads in the world, and they're living, again, in very isolated areas in their gares, herding sheep and goats and horses and so on. And there's no other way for them to get information. So radio really is the most important medium in these countries.
In America, you know, I think most people rely on radio for time, temperature, news, traffic, and music. Mm-hmm. What are some of the more unusual programs that you've heard?
Well, some of the more unusual uses of it would be what is the price of animal skins, for example, for the nomads. Of course, weather is important there, but I think they're probably very skilled at reading their own weather signs. But weather certainly is important, but price, market prices. And in places like Mozambique, again, there's agricultural information, but most importantly, it's kind of development-oriented things. Even the simple thing about announcing deaths and funerals is important. I remember at one station in Mozambique, there was a small family gathered around the station. I said, "Why are they here?" And they said, "Well, they've lost their family. They've gotten separated somehow, and the only place they knew to come was to the radio station to help to find them."
So the radio station isn't just like playing programs. It's like an active participant in the community.
Yes. That's one of the characteristics of these stations. They're not a passive transmitter of information. They're actively engaged with the community in the production of the programs, in getting feedback, in all aspects of it.
We asked you to bring in an excerpt of a broadcast from Mongolia. And what you've brought with you is a very kind of unusual broadcast. Maybe you can explain this for us and then play an excerpt.
This is a little piece that is heard on the state broadcasting. And it's unusual in that I think it's produced by somebody in Scotland, where there's also Mongolian listening. So it's a way of Mongolians kind of learning some English and about music, pop music. And the other thing I would mention in here is it's sponsored by Nescafe. And Mongolians, they have a way of kind of slurping their coffee and tea or something. So that's why you hear this kind of funny sound.
And so this is not community radio. This is
not community. This is a state radio and a local station in Ulaanbaatar, Blue Sky Radio.
Coffee break. Coffee break. This cafe. Coffee tassel. Coffee tassel.
Hello there, and welcome to Nescafe Coffee Break on Blue Sky Radio. Brian and Balor in our studio in Scotland with all of our listeners together on Blue Sky today. It's nice to be with you.
Sambano.
Sambano. Thank you. How do I say thank you?
Bairla.
Bairla.
Bairla. Maybe it's better for you to pronounce Bairla.
Bairla.
Yeah. Double L.
That sound is very difficult for Western people.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I think I'll stick to the music. Okay, The Backstreet Boys is what we're going to play today. One of the big songs of 1997. It's called As Long As You Love Me, and it's a good song.
Ингээд өнөөдөр Nescafe-аас сонсогч танда зориулахаар нэгэн дуу сонгоод байна. Энэ бол Backstreet Boys хамтлагийн As Long As You Love Me. Do you know the meaning of the name of the band?
No, it probably means that they come from a poor area. If you say they're Backstreet, it means they come from a poor area.
Okay, okay. Би Брайнас ягаад ийм нэртэй болсон гэж асуусан чинь Backstreet Boys гэхээр...
Bill, do you often hear Western pop music on the radio in Mongolia?
Yes. In fact, often I'm listening to the radio and I think it could be in America. It's only when I hear the back announce that I realize that it, of course, is not. Because they... have access in Ulaanbaatar to MTV on satellite. And so a lot of times their top 10 list will come off of MTV.
So I guess that's part of the reason why you need community radio.
And why you need community radio, yes, and ways of affirming the local culture.
Give me a sense of what you do. You fly into Mongolia. and then you head right to a radio station there. I mean, give me a sense of what your last trip to Mongolia was like.
My last trip to Mongolia was like this. I arrived on Friday and went to the foundation office.
Mm-hmm. It's the Soros Foundation.
Foundation. And met with my colleagues there. And Monday morning, we got on the Trans-Siberian Railroad and traveled 10 hours north to the Russian border, where there was a small town, provincial capital, where a couple of women journalists wanted to start a radio station. And so we met with them. We had our business meeting, and they said, we need some inspiration, so let's go to the countryside and go to a high point that's closer to the sky and to the birds. And so we did that, because the Mongolians are very close to nature and very connected to that. And... So this was a different kind of thing than you'd have as a business meeting here.
Yeah, I'll say.
We also went to visit what they called the mother tree, which has a legend around it that a mother with an infant was following a pilgrim in the winter, and she got lost and froze to death. And on that spot, a tree grew. And because of this, they felt that the area around that had special powers, particularly for women. And so women come and offer prayers, men and women, but it is particularly for women, for whatever. One of the journalists we were with had not been able to conceive a child, and she prayed to the mother tree, and she has two children now. Again, this isn't the typical kind of thing that you go out and do after a business meeting. We then took a train at 3 in the morning to another town where they were just starting a radio station, a UNESCO-sponsored station, and I did a workshop on what are the basics for starting a radio station.
Now, you've made several trips to South Africa in the past
few years,
and that's an area where the nature of broadcasting is really changing. It's not state-sponsored broadcasting anymore, and blacks in South Africa can have their own radio shows now, which is very new. It's just a post-apartheid phenomenon, I'd imagine.
Well, actually, during the days of apartheid, the South African Broadcasting Corporation did broadcast in the 11 languages, and Zulu is the most listened-to program service there. But it was all state-controlled,
right.
So... there were certainly black Africans that were broadcasting, but they were following the government line.
What's happening on South African radio now in the post-apartheid era that couldn't have happened under apartheid?
Well, one of the things that we're really proud of is that there's been remarkably effective election coverage with all the different parties. There are about 26 different parties or so. And the community stations really did extraordinary good leadership in that. South African Broadcasting also was doing a remarkable job of that. And it's interesting because I was there during the first election in 94, and there were all kinds of Americans and Canadians there to teach people how to cover elections as if we knew. And now I would say that they could come here and teach us some things about how to run elections. I mean, there weren't, you know, attack ads. There weren't, they were focusing on issues and really a lot of community participation.
You've brought with you a tape excerpt of an early broadcast from a community radio station. Tell us about the tape that you've brought. Introduce it for us.
Yes. I had the privilege of being with a group of rural women that were wanting to start a radio station in 1994. And they were learning how to use a tape recorder and a microphone for the first time. And they broke up into small groups, about four groups, and produced little five-minute pieces, complete with their own songs and interviews and so on. And then they sat down and they played them and critiqued them. And there was this wonderful moment after this of this realization that they could do it. And they said, we can do this. This isn't so hard. And that's one of the beautiful things about radio. It really is so accessible and so easy to do. And they put on this programming. And this is what it sounded like.
ba re sa pe khabetse ya butswa perere ba re tshwanetse go apewa 15 minutes fela e be gore wa e hlatlola o e fa ngwana a gao thobela ke a leboga go tla kena mmino 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 mmino
ka tle fishini ma ka tle fishini mamuse ma ka tle fishini
It's an excerpt of a broadcast from rural South Africa. My guest is Bill Siemering, who's been traveling to emerging democracies around the world, helping people build community radio stations. Bill, it must be sometimes frustrating for you to hear this exciting stuff happening on the radio in languages that aren't English.
So right.
You don't know exactly what's being said.
That's right. I know that one of the issues that they talked a lot about was polygamy, which is a very serious issue for rural women because their husbands go to town to work in the mines and leave them in the countryside. And while they're in the city, they take another bride and they are left sometimes with fewer resources. So they were having, as one of their slogans, one man, one wife.
We'll talk more with Bill Siemering after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Bill Siemering. He was NPR's first director of programming. Now he's working with radio stations in emerging democracies. You've had a lot of experience working with people in the United States who are starting in public radio or community radio, trying to kind of instill in them a sense of journalistic ethics and fairness and professionalism in front of the microphone. And I'm wondering if a lot of the standards that you've taught here in the United States are the same ones that you're trying to teach now in emerging democracies, or if things are different because the culture is different and the location is different.
Well, there certainly are basic principles in covering news and accuracy, fairness, and balance, for example, that apply all over. It's just like you operate with sterile instruments. That's kind of a given. And we talk about the importance of being able to trust what comes out of the radio speaker as you trust the water to be pure when you open the tap. But one of the issues that came up in South Africa early on was the idea of access, because their community radio is really part of the liberation struggle, giving a voice to the voiceless, and everyone has a right to be on the radio. And much of the training in the beginning days when I first went there was, using a boombox to produce radio. And so you have this terrible sounding click, click, click editing on cassette to cassette, which is hard to listen to. But when the stations went on air, they quickly found that the listeners were saying, you know, that presenter isn't very good. Why are they on the radio? And so I argued that not everyone has a right to be on the radio. I think the listeners have a right, all the listeners have a right to expect something worth listening to on the radio. And unless you are reaching out with some level of professionalism, with some degree of quality, good quality programming and presentation, you're not going to be serving the community.
It's interesting because it takes quality and makes it into a democratic principle as opposed to making it into an elitist principle.
Yes, and really that's all we were talking about. It was a matter of having, you know, there's a great deal of freshness to it because people have not used radio before. They don't know what you can't do with it. They don't run everything through a focus group. And there's some marvelous inventive things that come from this. In one station in South Africa near Cape Town called Radio Zibonelli, which is in a vast township, 750,000 people living in a sandy plain. And Radio Zibonelli has as its mission to improve the quality of the health of the community. And by that they mean not only the physical health, but the cultural health, the educational health, the environmental health. And Zibonelli means see for yourself. Here's the information, see for yourself. And it's a wonderful idea of self-help. It's the whole idea is no one's going to come down from heaven to clean this up or make this a nice place. It's up to us to do this ourselves. And so they do it. And they have on the mornings a remarkable program where listeners call up and tell their friends to wake up.
Excuse me?
So it'd be like, I would call up and say, tell Terry Gross to wake up. It's time to get to work. Huh. And so these messages go out. And it's kind of a wonderful way of creating community. It's a little maybe like Garrison Keillor talking about, you know, the messages, we'll be home, whatever, where you personalize a community that way. And it has the largest listenership, I think, of any station, any community station in South Africa.
Are there any aspects of your work now that remind you of when you were young and getting started in radio, working in public radio, I think, in Wisconsin?
Yes. My roots in public radio are very deep because when I went to this sounds like a funny story, but when I went to a two-room country school, in Wisconsin, I learned about science and social studies, music and art, all on radio by listening to the Wisconsin School of the Air. And now in Mongolia, we're talking about maybe a Mongolia School of the Air where there can be actual instructional programs for isolated schools in rural areas. So there is a parallel there.
When you come home, do you see democracy in the United States or radio in the United States in a different way than you did before you started this work?
Yes, I came back once and I remember some people were saying, boy, this Rush Limbaugh, I mean, gee, something ought to be done about him. And I said, whoa, I mean, this is a free society, you know? That's what democracy is about, whether you like him or not. It's instructive and it's what we're doing here. You can't very well come back and say, you know, take that kind of line when you're encouraging people overseas to have a free and open discussion of ideas. And it's a little discouraging just to find things so kind of carefully formatted and so limited in a way that there's not this same spirit of experimentation and fun and trying things that that I see overseas in the new democracies. One of the things that I enjoy about working overseas is that all the people nearly that I work with are very young. Radio is a medium of the young people. And this is the new generation that's kind of taking over in the countries. And so they're full of new ideas and enthusiasm for radio as a medium, storytelling, creative uses of it that we haven't done so much of here lately. And so this is very heartening to me. And when I do workshops, I frequently end by pointing out that in English, the original meaning of broadcast was to scatter seeds. And I ask them what their meaning of broadcast is, and it tends to be similar. And I love that image of scattering seeds, because I think that's what we as broadcasters do. We scatter seeds of information, of ideas that grow. Some of them don't grow, but that's what we offer for our listeners.
Well, Bill Seemring, thank you very much, and good luck in your travels around the world.
Thank you.
Bill Seemring works with the Soros Foundation's Open Society Institute, helping community radio stations in emerging democracies. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.